Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems. But getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Welcome to the What Culture Gaming Podcast. I'm your host, Scott Tilford, joined by Josh Brown.
Hello.
Now, initially, we were going to title this Red Dead Redemption 2 doesn't deserve Game of the Year 2018.
And I had to fight tooth and nail, so we didn't title it like that.
So we'll see how the likes and dislikes go from the reactionary stance of people checking out the title and then going, oh dear God, and downvoting it. But this will be a 50-50 debate. Josh is arguing for the Red Dead Redemption 2 being Game of the Year 2018. I'm going to present some reasons as to why I don't think it should be. And we'll kind of go from there. We've got a lot of time to pass these things out, and obviously you guys can let us know what you think down in the comments, all for conversation, nuance, and debate. So you hit credits last week, I think it was.
Yep, just after your wedding, actually.
Yes, and which, you know, happy married and all that. But you were saying that you thought the epilogue was a bit of a slog. We've got some points to hit here, but I kind of want to just go with immediate thoughts and we'll kind of extrapolate from there.
Yeah.
So for my whole thing was, I thought that the chapter 6 was just an ungodly, badly paced thing. Another thing, full spoilers for this entire thing as well.
Yeah.
Got to point that out. So from the start of chapter 6, when Arthur gets diagnosed with tuberculosis,
yes,
that thing kind of completely broke the pacing for me, because I was like, well, nothing matters anymore. And then I thought the game itself still had way too much packed into chapter 6. It was just a slog, just riding point to point to point. And it just kind of just fell apart. There was no reason for me to indulge in anything because I knew he was going to die.
Yeah.
And then you get to the epilogue and that is unbelievably long as well. But I think you can leap in here because that was the bit that you thought was a bit...
Well, here's the thing where I agree and disagree, because the epilogue, in my opinion, was a touch of a slog, but I couldn't... Well, I do agree with you on Chapter 6. Chapter 6 takes a definite turn where you don't want to indulge in that wider open world. You don't want to do the activities you've been doing, but I think that is very intentional, and it is deserved when you get at least the emotional feeling I got from seeing Arthur sort of get diagnosed and then how he had to respond to it, how you responded as a player to not want to go around robbing and not want to go around wasting your final moments or whatever. I thought that worked, but the epilogue, on the other hand, was certainly a weird note to end the game on, especially after, like, you know, the rousing emotion of that final chapter, and then it just went on and on and on. And there's a lot to love in there, man. That montage of when you're building the house is like downright awesome.
I love that. That might be low-key my favorite thing in the whole game.
Right.
Because one of the things that I think elevates Red Dead is like they have all these horrible sort of like drawn-out slog. Like people have talked a lot about the busy work in the game and the sort of the slog and the drawn-out hunting mechanics or like the camp stuff or whatever. Just even the basic animation priority, like, you know, makes everything slower. But I kind of think all of that is in service of those little pockets of humanity where things come together and you feel like a sense of life amongst like the Wild West.
Yeah.
And so that bit, when the house started coming together and they had that lush little song about like building your house together, give me a nail and I'll hammer it and all that kind of thing. And I was like, yeah, I get it. Like all of this was for this and I really value the ranch and stuff. But that doesn't get around the fact that it takes a good 3 hours to get to that bit.
Honestly, you told me it was a 4 hour long epilogue, which I was bracing myself for. It took me way longer than that to get through it. Maybe because I was doing the couple of bounties that popped up and doing a couple other things. But I wasn't like wasting time. It just took me a long time to get through it. And it did take far too long, in my opinion.
Yeah.
But it's like those pockets of humanity that you said. That's why I think the game works so well, because everything is in service of that sort of sense of community, that sense of humanity that's at the heart of like these outlaws at the end of the day. And when you don't have that at the end of the game, it's sort of, it just becomes another open world game, if that makes sense. The activities you're doing are compelling enough and they are fun. I enjoy hunting, I enjoy seeking out these cabins, mm-hmm. but chapter 2, 3, 4 and even into 6 to an extent worked so well because everything you were doing was in service of those pockets of humanity, in service of the camp, in service of keeping those characters, you know, their morale up, interacting with them and stuff like that.
See, that's where we get to some big fundamental issues because for chapters 1 to 5, especially 2, 3, and 4, and especially chapter 3, when you're in the heart of that stuff, I loved it and I could suspend my disbelief and be like, okay, I'm building towards something huge. Or I'm like playing this like fundamental role in the whole story and like I'm bringing carcasses back to camp. I'm helping cook stuff. Like I'm helping Pearson like change the broth that he's making or whatever. And I'm going out and I'm eating the dishes and stuff and I'm dancing with people and I loved all that stuff, but I kind of thought they were going somewhere with it that they just never were.
Yeah.
Like, because like when you really boil it down, and I have to get all mechanical about it, but when you really boil it down, like camp maintenance is the ledger where you just like run down a bunch of like, you know, like pay for this and then the icon changes color. And once you've done all those upgrades, you only need to do them once. Mm-hmm. And then once they're done, you just check out the ledger, re-up the meds, re-up the ammo, and then that's it. You never really do anything else. And the camp doesn't play into anything else for the rest of the story. It is I don't want to call it just busy work because I do think it has like narrative weight and like, and I do care about the camp members and everything. But like, all this is kind of why I think the whole thing doesn't coalesce, because you have all these like, you have all these side things that you can do, all these like, you know, like hunting and gathering and all the side missions and the character interactions and everything. All these things that you can do that would shape Arthur as a person. And then you get to the end and all you were really building towards was a 50-50 split. If you were above 50 on the honor meter, you get one ending. And if you're below it, you get the other one. You're either the best person ever or you're someone who can go out peacefully or you're a dog and you get put down. And like that left me with such a horrible feeling of, well, what was even the point? And so like, because I was on the 50, I was right in the middle. But in that chapter 6, after the diagnosis, I just started being like, well, I'm not going to bother doing the extra stuff, so I just did the main missions, but I mustn't have been high enough on it, so Micah just executed me.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, all of that slog, all the time that I put into all of these separate things didn't really result in anything.
Yeah.
And you can argue that that's the point because it's the Wild West and, you know, people did just get put out to pasture because they were outlaws, their time was over. But I just think the amount of effort they put into that wider world, I think it sucks that they couldn't bring it all together.
For me, I know what you're saying, and I do kind of see how annoying it is to just have that 50-50 split, but for me, the payoff to that camp stuff actually comes before the ending, and it comes in that chapter 6 where everyone's just leaving and everyone's just abandoning you and everyone's turning against you. And for me, that made it worthwhile. That made me investing in the camp beforehand and putting all my money in and trying my best to keep it as upkept as possible and interacting with everyone and becoming their friends. That hit so much harder when in chapter 6 everyone is leaving you and everyone is turning their backs on you and sort of you're like, what was the point of this? I've spent my entire life and in-game life and Arthur's, you know, in narrative life.
It's a long game.
Yeah, being loyal. Yeah, literally my entire life. Being loyal to these people and trying to help them and see them turn on you and see them just not care or appreciate anything you're doing. That for me was the payoff to it, not so much whatever specific ending you got.
I think for me it came off as like it petering out because like you have meaningful interactions with like Mary Beth and Lenny, like you have the whole Lenny, like the drinking mission. You have certain people like Pearson as well, you check in with him regularly, you have all those kind of interactions that feel meaningful and you can go find Pearson in the epilogue and hang out with him and stuff. But I just, like I said, I think that stuff kind of peters out because like, I don't know, it's weird. They hang a lot of the camp falling apart on Molly. Molly O'Shea, which is like Dutch's mistress. She just comes in and she's like, I've dimed you out, and then like she gets shot by Miss Grimshaw, and you kind of just go like, okay, like Molly wasn't a fundamental part of anything beforehand, so for her to like betray the camp and trigger what eventually results in everyone going their separate ways, for me didn't land at all because I was like, who is this character really? And even though I had spent time hanging out with him, I mean, I must have put about 80 hours into the story, and I did hang out with all those separate people, it just felt that like in chapter 6 when everything is supposed to be meaning something, that those interactions don't pay off because you can't have any meaningful conversations with people about Arthur's disease or the fact that he's not like, he can't, in theory, he can't fundamentally be as effective to the camp or the people as he could before. And so it's weird because he gets diagnosed and then every conversation you have with someone, like the dialogue now is him wheezing his way in and then they go like, they might go, are you okay? And he goes, yeah, I'm fine, I can get on with it. And then you just get on with it. And I was like, what? There's no like slow degradation. There's no slow like real weight to anything. It just kind of felt like I'm dying. dying and this thing, it's just dragging out. Like, I just didn't really know what they wanted me to feel. I think it's the whole redemption thing.
It's just playing to the title. I think for me, that was kind of, again, I'm maybe giving it too much credit. For me, that was sort of intentional. When I was trying to give those, when I was trying to talk to people about my illness and then they wouldn't talk to me about it, they'd make reference to it. Like, Micah would call you Black Lung or something. Or Bill would give you grief for not being as strong as you used to be.
Dutch doesn't even notice.
And I think, or if he does, he doesn't care. That is intentional because at the end he does leave you to die when you're trying to save Eagle Flies. And it's like, I think all of those little interactions and the lack of any closure or connection to these people over that illness worked for me, because then it was adding into that realization of my God, I've wasted my time with these people. Some of them do. People like John, Abigail, they care, but the people I was closest to, Dutch, Bill, like my ride or die bros, they just do not fundamentally care about me. And I was like, that played into the themes of, well, I guess this is falling apart.
I think you've kind of got to go digging for that realization, though, because, like, that's the thing. Like, Dutch just doesn't say anything at all. There's not even any, like, shots in. There's not even any cutscenes where they show him not looking when you're talking or something that could have hinted at the fact that he just thinks of you as this, like, expendable outlaw.
Yeah.
Because clearly he does. His whole, like, you know, the way that he values people is just that they're expendable. They're assets to be used, and he moves on. And that's kind of his thing. But, yeah, because they don't bring that stuff together, I've kind of got to go looking for it. And to be honest, I've written this whole thing. It'll be an editorial on the it's already on the website, but it'll be a video at some point about how if you play Red Dead Redemption 2 like a Rockstar game, then they just put you out to pasture, because you are supposed to have that redemptive arc at the end. You are supposed to, like, you know, realize your own mortality and then mature because of it and do the best that you can. But I don't think they seed that in the preceding chapters at all. Like, and because it's a Rockstar game, and because there's, like, so much, like, comedic writing in the NPC dialogue or the things that Arthur says if you start, like, messing around or whatever, they encourage you to some degree, especially because of how fast your honor goes south if you do anything negative. They kind of encourage you to just mess around and have fun with it. And so, but if you do that, you get the worst ending. And so, like, my whole thing, I've started having this, like, kind of reflective thing on the entire game where I'm like, one, what was it all for?
Yeah.
And then two, like, the systems that they've put in place actively give you a hollow kind of ending. Whereas, like, it didn't for you because you had the sunrise ending.
Yeah.
But for me, it just kind of didn't
come
together.
This is the bit where we completely disagree.
Yes, good.
Like, which is great because, you know, you say, like, it punishes you for it being a Rockstar game, and I only think it does once you hit chapter 6. Before then, you're, like, encouraged to go wild, you're encouraged to be this outlaw, you're encouraged to rob people and take their money back, you're encouraged to rob trains and take that money back to your camp and support this camp. But when you are hit with that diagnosis, me as a player felt that sort of weight of it, like, oh, well, what's the point? I don't want to be this horrible person. I don't want to spend my final days, like, being this horrible outlaw. I kind of want to get redeemed and make amends for it. I do think that is seeded in the game before then, because even in some of the activities you're doing earlier on in the game, like when you're collecting money for Strauss and you're beating people up, I had this conversation with you and Ewan as soon as that happened, like, really early on, and I felt, like, kind of ugly for doing it.
You said.
Like, it just feels incongruent with who Arthur is as a person. And I think that sort of disassociation between what he's doing and who he really is seeded from the beginning, and then that comes out fully in the end, which makes you as a player kind of want to engage with the game differently and not play it as a Rockstar game. I think it does punish you, but at that point, I think, at least for me, I didn't want to play it as a Rockstar game anymore, and I think that is the point.
I think that's what my editorial is going to be on, because I think they wanted to, like, they tried maturity back in GTA 4. They tried to give you more realistic motivations, the whole, like, you know, how hollow is the American dream and all, like, what is it like to be Nico and all that kind of stuff, and, like, it didn't land. And so, like, they backtracked on it with GTA 5, and then they came back with this. Pardon me. And I do think that's what they're going for. Don't know what that noise was. But I do think that's what they're going for. I think they want you to have this, like, self-reflective, you know, like, opinion or, like, kind of viewpoint on where you've come from and what you've been doing. But I don't necessarily think that they encourage you too much towards the nefarious stuff in the earlier chapters, because if you sit down with Mary Beth, then Arthur's, like, everything he says, it never landed for me at all.
Right.
Because everything he said was counterintuitive to what he was doing. Like, it was the ludonarrative dissonance problem that GTA 4 had, where Nico would be complaining about want and violence in a cutscene, but then you could just make him go and destroy people, or he would do that in a mission, and it didn't line up. So with Arthur, like, you sit down with Mary Beth, and he's like, I've just been killing people, I've been slaughtering wildlife, I don't even know why I'm doing it, or whatever. And it's like, well, one, you you're getting wildlife for the camp, we've established this. And two, the people that you're killing are witnesses that need to be silenced, or they're ones in missions. It never felt like his dialogue lined up with anything that was going on in the real world.
See, again, I couldn't completely disagree more, because to me, that was directly addressing that sort of ludonarrative distance. It, like, you are, of course, you know, killing people who need to be killed and hunting things and bringing it back to the camp. Mm-hmm. But you only get those dialogue triggers if you are not bringing things back to the camp. If you're running things over with your horse, if you're shooting things and you don't end up using them, like, either their items, or you don't end up bringing them back, that's when you get, like, oh, I've been killing animals just willy-nilly. I've been killing people.
But they don't acknowledge that it's an accident, though. Like, because that's the thing. Everyone's going to run into something by accident. Yeah. But then he talks about it as if you've just been slaughtering horses or whatever. And it's like, nah, that's, for me, that was a disconnect. And so, like, that's the thing. The more that they build this world that is so meticulous and obviously is belabored, the amount of time that's gone into perfecting this, like, open world, the more that every, like, aspect of it has, feels like it should be all pre-thought out.
Yeah.
And so, like, you, when you have something like that where he just says something that doesn't really land, or he talks about himself being like, I only kill people that need to be killed. And I'm like, no, you don't. Mm. You just butchered someone for looking at you wrong or whatever. And obviously that's my choice to do that, but that should then be reflected in Arthur as a character. And I think that they want to write Arthur in a certain way because they need you to have the payoff at the end. They need you to be more like moralistically whole or like, morally whole. And so like when that, like if you play against that, it just breaks everything because it's like, unless you go with the whole, if you can't even get above the 50-50 mark on the honor, then we're just going to put you down. If you can't learn from your mistakes, we're just going to put you down. That's kind of the core of the editorial thing that I wrote. But in the preceding chapters, like none of that really coalesced for me. Like a lot of people are like, oh, I really love Arthur, I think he's a great character. And I'm like, yeah, he's fine. I like the sketches that he does and I think there's more to him.
Yeah.
But he just never, he wasn't really a character. He was like this weird kind of half cipher avatar for me.
Yeah.
And I could play him in a certain way and some dialogue will make sense. But then other bits, all the other main beats of the story don't really work. His moral values are there and they're not, like in certain cutscenes with Dutch and whatever. So I kind of think for me, Rockstar struggled to like coalesce the story with the open world, which is another larger thing. Because I think a lot of people get the story out of the way so they can enjoy the open world. Like, I've got a new save in chapter 3 because I like the open world a lot more than going through the story. But, I mean, what do you think in terms of, like, prioritizing one or the other? Do you think they coalesce that way?
That's interesting, actually, because when I finished the game and you do just get to roam the wilderness and you get to do whatever you want to do, I found that far less compelling than when I had a story motivation to do it. I know you mean going back to, like, chapter 2 and 3 when you do have the camp and you have those systems in place. Mm-hmm.
It's really worth addressing very quickly, though, that because of the way the epilogue ends, you end as John Marston, but you get given the open world, including the map of Red Dead 1 that's like bolted onto the bottom of the 2 map. But because of the way that him and Abigail talk, and Abigail's like, can you give up the outlaw life? I need you to settle down. I need to be safe. I need you to stop bringing trouble to our door. Then the only one time that he like defies that and goes against it is to finish off Micah and get revenge.
Yeah.
And so when he comes back and they settle down and you even get the montage of him eating food with Uncle, it makes no sense whatsoever for you to go back out into the world again.
It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Before we go any further, I want to talk to you about today's sponsor, Masterclass. With the amount of time we spend discussing and analyzing video games on this channel, it's always good to understand exactly how these experiences are put together. And fortunately for me, I can do just that with Masterclass. With Masterclass's streaming service, you can learn from the best to become your best, studying and growing with over 200 plus of the world's leading instructors. For me, I've been having a blast using a class on video game design by The Sims creator Will Wright to find out exactly how game mechanics are designed around player psychology, as well as learning how important playtesting is to shipping the titles that you and I both love.
But it hasn't stopped there, as I've also been brushing up on my practical filmmaking skills directly from my favourite movie director, Martin Scorsese, as well as trying to get back in the cooking game with Roy Choi's amazing course on intuitive cooking. Seriously, my kitchen is a mess, but my belly has never been more grateful. For just $10 a month, an annual membership with Masterclass gets you unlimited access to courses on your phone, computer, smart TV, or even via audio-only modes. Even better, every new membership comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee, and 88% of members feel that the service has made a positive impact on their lives. And to put the cherry on top of that cake, right now, What Culture Gaming listeners get an additional 15% off any annual membership at masterclass.com/gaming. That's 15% off at masterclass.com/gaming. What's that? You want it one more time? Well, that's the URL, masterclass.com/gaming. Right, now I'm going to watch Tony Hawk try to teach me how to ollie properly. I'll see you all soon.
This is what I don't have a problem with, but what I was thinking always throughout the game. It was the same when you got like diagnosed with tuberculosis and you just think, well, what's the point? I don't want to engage with this. And when the camp falls apart and you're like, well, I don't really care anymore. And it's the same when you get John Marston. You're like, well, Abigail wants me to be this person and John is trying so hard to be this person. Why would I go out and start, you know, killing people in shacks and stuff and killing people?
And then lying to your wife.
But I think that's fine and works because I personally, I'd prefer that and to have like a satisfying story, emotional payoff and reason and contextualization for what you're doing rather than just, he's a bunch of really cool mechanics and open world stuff because any game has that. Like Assassin's Creed Odyssey has that. A lot of open world games have that sort of mechanical draw, whereas this meshed them together in a way that I thought was really great, but does indeed sort of leave it kind of lacking when the story part isn't there.
Yeah, well, I think that's what they want the biggest take. Obviously, they want the biggest takeaway to be this like destitute look at Wild West life, where it's like, what was it all for? Well, you know, the little tiniest pockets of humanity, and they're literally like tiny specks of positivity in an otherwise completely bleak world. Like the first time you do the campfire, I think it's in chapter 2.
Yeah,
where you get a dancer on the campfire and everyone's dancing together. I love that.
So good.
That's one of my favorite moments in the game, and one of the things that I think makes all the slog stuff worth it because they pay it off. But they want you to sort of come away with this like feeling of like, what's it all for? It was a big waste. And what did I really accomplish? And it's weird because putting value on that is going to differ person to person. For me, when the credits hit, I was glad that it was done because I was just like, I just wanted to just see the end of it because then I can enjoy the hunting stuff. But that fundamental takeaway, I don't know, man. I don't know how much we have to just give Rockstar like the authored assumption that they wanted you to feel that, or it's because it like the systems don't coalesce, the camp stuff doesn't really mean anything, and those relationships with the wider camp members don't really mean as much as like something like a Micah interaction or a Dutch interaction. Like all these elements that are sort of just there, and you can interact with them if you want, but I would love it if it came together more, just more holistically.
Yeah.
Like by the time I'm at the end credits and I think back of all the time I put into it, there's all these like disparate things. Hunting's kind of over there, but it doesn't really matter. You can go to St. Denis, there's all these comments on high society, it doesn't really matter. There's all the Native American stuff that doesn't really matter. It's kind of crowbarred into chapter 6. And so for me, it's all these like disparate parts that I think is them painting a picture of the Wild West. But the takeaway is that 90% of it was a big old waste of time and a complete moral cluster F.
Yeah.
And it didn't really, you know, people like Arthur tried their best in some cases, but just got put out to pasture. And I don't really know what I'm supposed to take from that, other than just it's a big old depressing time.
See, that's what I don't get. I don't think at all that it was ever a waste of time or like that those things didn't matter. Like, I agree that the final stuff with Eagle Flies and Rains Falls was a bit crowbarred on, and I would have liked to have that seeded a bit more before then. But for me, like, that mattered because it mattered to Arthur and like who he was as a person and how he developed, like, even the interactions with the camp is, I thought they came together because even if you were out hunting, it sort of showed who Arthur was. He was ready to do like this busy work that anyone could have, and they're just sitting on their ass doing nothing. And that sort of fed into your relationship with this person you were playing as. And I like that you mentioned that Arthur was sort of this 50% a character and 50% an avatar for who I am and who I want him to be. I didn't get that at all, in a way. Right. I thought I was, all the way through, I was playing it as if I was this character. I was making decisions as if I was him rather than as if I was just in the Wild West.
See, that's one of the biggest things, because I couldn't tell you what Arthur is as a character because of how much input I have on his everyday actions.
Yeah.
So, like, for me, he's someone who likes to hunt and skin, and he's, like, he's got a solid moral core. Like, he's not just going to go out of his way to butcher people. He can. And that's the thing. They try and justify it in the game by saying, like, well, you know, he, whatever needs to be done, he'll do it. And it's like, okay, fine. And like he's so desensitized. There's one of the conversations you can have with Mary Beth. He's like, oh, times are changing, we won't be able to kill as much. And he just says it just nonchalantly, as if like that's just something you do. Like you take out the bag of grain in the morning and you kill someone on the way to the next mission or the next like point of interest. And I don't know if that's fascinating or not. Like that should kind of be this massive comment on how desensitized he is.
Yeah.
But because he's so removed, like there's not that much investment in him.
Right.
And then they throw the tuberculosis thing in as a way to like expedite that morality system and a way to go like, okay, you need to care about your actions. But that, and again, could be the complete intentional comment on the way that I'm playing. It became this like fatalistic, nihilistic thing where I was just like, well, nothing matters and I might as well just kill everybody. And like, or not that I did, but like I might, nothing matters. So like, I'm going to die anyway. And then like there was all that kind of stuff. So
I love the differences that we have when it gets to like, because you just go, yep, nothing matters. I'm going to kill everyone. I could kill everyone. Like, what's the point? Whereas I was like, crap, now everything matters. Everything I'm doing, like,
speaking of that too, I can bring that around to the Mrs. Downs missions, because
I was just about to bring up the Stranger missions actually.
So the Mrs. Downs mission triggers if your honor is high enough towards the end of the game. It's in chapter 6, and the Downs family is the first person you go and get the money from that Strauss gives you the mission for, which is the guy that coughs on you that gives you the tuberculosis. So that was another thing that didn't land for me, because I was like, in Arthur's journal he's like, oh, I must have got it from Downs, and I'm like, who's that guy? The guy from 70 hours ago? Like, I don't remember. But like, looking it up, there are additional missions that flesh that out. And Arthur can have a mini redemptive arc with the Downs family.
Yeah.
But it doesn't trigger if you're not above the 50-50 mark. Or at least it didn't for me.
Do you know why I don't think that is as big a deal as people are claiming it to be? Because there are so many other Stranger missions during that final stretch that do the same thing for Arthur. Like, he might not be able to get that redemptive with that specific family, but you still find out who he is and sort of his new take on life after that diagnosis with, like, the veteran, or, like, I think it's Charlotte who lives up in the very top of the North whose husband dies.
But with them, though, they're not in the credits, whereas Downs is. And so, like, with me, I still got Mrs. Downs in the credits at the end.
Right.
And I just went, who's that? And then so I had to Google and go, oh, there's a Mrs. Downs mission. And it had a whole thing. And you missed it because you weren't above 50% on it.
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay, that just sucks. Because, like, I should have that should have been a fundamental part of the story. It's a fundamental part of his character. Because you can argue that the Downs stuff factors into why he's able to enjoy a sunset at the end. Because he did one good thing.
Yeah.
And he allowed their lives to continue, you know, sun rising in the next day and all that kind of thing. But for me, it just wasn't there. But then the game kind of goes, it should have been. And then here she is in the credits, and it's like, right?
Yeah. I don't know how much weight I put on things being in the credits or not in the credits. I think, you know, that Downs thing does play, and don't get me wrong, if you act morally in this game, that Downs thing is a big
it's
part
right there,
of it.
Yeah.
Yeah, but there are lots of other things you do in that final stretch where you're giving money to people and helping people out, like the Nonin stuff. That
well, you can. That's the thing.
Same
you can.
Job. Yeah, but you can do anything in this game.
But that's
my
point, because it's so freeform. They then hang so much on the. I mean, you can go, well, it's called Red Dead Redemption. You're not supposed. It's not Red Dead Maniac. You're supposed to be doing something. But that's the thing, because it's so freeform. They let you just go have fun, just go be an outlaw, do all these different things. But then they hang so much stuff on your ending actions. And it goes down to a 50-50 split. So it's like, yeah, you can go around giving money out and all that kind of thing and you'll get a better ending. But because they encourage all these other stuff, I know we talked about it before, but they encourage or have the systems in place to let you rob a train, to let you, like, you know, hogtie someone and drown them or whatever, then it's weird. They didn't feel like they had as many different endings that could have addressed those things.
But then do you not think you deserve that ending? If you're at that point and you are just being a bastard, like, do you not just deserve it? Like, if you're not bothering with these strangers, like, then that's the way you're playing, and then that should inform the ending you get.
It should. I think that should. For me, it's just a case of, essentially at that point, it's a case of more endings, because I think because literally, if you're on the negative side of the honor meter, then Micah holds the pistol up to you on the mountain and says something about you know, like, why do you deserve Damas or something, and Arthur just screams Damas all, and he gets shot.
Yeah,
and it's like just cold, and you're just getting executed, and it's like that should have been the worst ending, the one that's completely morally devoid of anything. If you'd never tried with anybody ever, then you should have just been killed by some guy that has the gun when you didn't. And like, that would have been this great comment on survival of the fittest and exactly what the Wild West was, and or the Old West and all that kind of stuff. But it's just, I don't know, they have, it's so open, and like, I think you kind of have to go digging to make it work. I think it absolutely works for people like you and that played more positively. I still played positively, but I landed in the second half, like, just, and that kind of broke it.
The very end, did you save, like, John?
Oh, yeah, I went with John.
Do you not think that sort of plays into it, though? Like, we've got, like, Downs and stuff. Like, I guess from the main narrative perspective, if you don't do any of those side missions or strange missions, then John is his, like, redemption. Saving him and Abigail and Jack is, like, him sort of redeeming himself, and it is his kind of final act with that in mind, does that not change anything?
The thing, because it was so predictable, I didn't like it.
Right.
Because one of the reasons that I adore Red Dead Redemption 1 is because, like, when John dies, when he gets killed by Edgar Ross and the whole crew, you come back up as Jack, and then you just sort of explore. And in your own head, you think, I wonder if I can go to Blackwater, and I wonder if there's anything there.
Yeah.
And you just go there, and you find members of his, you know, you track him down. You find out, like, you know, his different family members, and you go, oh, my God, it's this big villain. I'm going to go chase him down. And you go family member by family member, and you find him just fishing by the river, and he's an old man. Mm-hmm. And he just sort of sits there, and you get to do the Inigo Montoya from Princess Bride thing, where it's like, you killed my father.
Yeah.
I'm going to kill you. And that was so powerful because it was a dynamic interaction in an open world game, which is what Rockstar should bring to the table, something new. And so with this one, as soon as he got diagnosed, I was like, well, I know exactly how this is going to go.
Right.
And like, as much as I like playing as John Marston, I was like, right, he's going to die. We're going to play as John Marston. And then the open world is just going to be there, and there's going to be some sort of revenge arc. And that was literally it, because like, as soon as the epilogue started, it's like, right, well, we're building the shack and we're going to go kill Micah.
Yeah.
And then they even seed that with like Sadie being like, oh yeah, I'm tracking him down, I'll let you know, and you go and do it. And then there's a bit of a twist with Dutch being there, but like, for the most part, you just finish him off, and then it just plays out the exact way you think it's going to. Yeah. And I was like, that's just kind of meh.
For me, that's not a problem, just because like, this is a prequel and there is a sort of set story this needed to kind of join onto. I would have liked a couple more twists, a couple, maybe something with Arthur and John, because there isn't really any explanation why he's not mentioned
in
Red Dead Redemption 1. But I think where that story ends up in the kind of fatalistic thing of it, like, you are, in that epilogue, you are essentially trying to build a new life. And if you played Red Dead Redemption 1, you know that life is not sustainable. And I like the tragedy to that, like having to play through that, having to play through that hope and the kind of Arthur's redemption that ultimately doesn't mean nothing, but you know the way it's going to go. That was tragic enough and acted as a nice compliment to the original game, in my opinion.
I think that's the thing. I think my ultimate thing isn't that, you know, it's just that they should have, for me, my ultimate thing, personal wish for the game, is that I think they should have had more endings that widely address the wider array of things you can do across that entire game, rather than boiling it down to a 50-50 split.
Right.
Something that, because you could be a complete monster until the start of chapter 6, and then you can indulge in the positive stuff, and he'll still get to see the sunrise.
Yeah.
Which isn't an all-round, like, messianic ending. It's not amazing or anything, but it's way more positive framed than just getting killed. And so my whole thing was, I shouldn't be, personally, I was like, I shouldn't be punished or given the evil ending or the put out in a pasture ending just because I couldn't get past the 50 mark. And like, an honor meter that is just sort of like this arbitrary measure of other things that you're doing until then.
Yeah.
Like, you know, and you have a few conversations about honor. I think the ultimate takeaway, and I love this about the game, is that like, it's kind of Rockstar saying like, if you can't even get past the 50 mark, then we're just going to put you down.
Yeah.
And like, and I like that as a comment on their own history, and I've written about this, but like, their own history as Rockstar and the games that they've made, Manhunt Warriors and Bully and that kind of stuff, they've finally found a way to grow up and make the people like me who didn't play completely honorably, make us feel bad. But the problem with that is that you still built a game that encourages that stuff and recorded dialogue and interactions and animations that it's fun to be bad in those games. So it's like, it's just a strange kind of dichotomy, because for me, it doesn't coalesce. I get what they're doing, but the feeling was just kind of like, it just was like, oh man, I've got to go, I've really got to dig for this to feel good.
Man, see, but for me, it entirely coalesced. I do think they encourage you to play a certain way until they don't encourage you to play a certain way. Then you're kind of encouraged to be a nice guy and try to help people out. I don't entirely agree with the fact that like, the ending you got was like the evil ending, the bad ending, but there was still redemption in there. You still helped John. You weren't just sort of put down. It wasn't all for nothing. There was still a point to be made there, unless you went back for the money, because I know that is a slight permutation on it.
True. You can just let John go do his own thing.
Yeah.
That's another thing. Like, we'll probably do a follow up on this at some point, but it might be part of the Game of the Year discussions later on.
Probably.
But that's the thing. Like, you know, you can move away and just leave John to go. Or if you get the good ending with the sunrise, Micah just walks away. So it doesn't make a whole lot of sense for why John is then cares about getting revenge on him in the epilogue. Like, it makes sense in my playthrough because Micah's the guy that executed Arthur, even though John didn't see it.
Micah also sold everyone out, though. He was the guy.
Sort of hang that on Molly, but then they twist it around and go, Micah was actually the guy working with the feds and stuff.
Like, Molly was actually all right in the end.
Yeah, which in my head right now, in this very moment, means that I can't make sense of why she stumbled into the camp saying that she sold everybody out.
Yeah, I think it was just to get, because all the way like through, if you like talk to her, there's multiple times where she tries to talk to Arthur and then she's like trying to talk about her and Dutch and how Dutch is being treated bad, and then he always gets like cut off. Mm-hmm. And I think it was just kind of like a final act of like revenge of like, I didn't do this, but I'm going to twist the knife in you. Like, and
maybe.
Yeah, that does.
It's just a lie.
And yeah, but it sends him over the edge in the end. Like, yeah, he has lost a lot of people, but that's like the final loss. Like, the person, like, he doesn't like love her or anything, but well, not properly love her. He's like,
well, that
character's soulmates,
barely written, yeah.
But like, that final act of betrayal is kind of what pushes Dutch over the end. I think that that lie does to kind of dig deep.
I like that. I think that, like, that's the thing. I mean, like, person to person, like, experience to experience, depending on how much you like reading films or reading games, and we do because we're massive nerds, hence the last, like, half hour. But I think that that's it's going to depend how much you want to go digging for stuff. I don't mind that. I do like sort of taking in, like, a whole game and stuff. I just, when I hit the credits, I just thought back on the whole thing, and I was like, I just wish that it had an ending that was only I got that ending, or, like, you know, or just more than two, more than a 50-50 split. Although I do get that that's what they're trying to say. Like, they assume anyway, you know, if you can't be this good, then we're just going to shoot you.
Yeah.
And I quite like that more as a comment on them as a studio and how far they've come and that kind of thing. So I guess my kind of closing thing is that I think it's an incredible game. I think it's like this immaculate open world thing, but I think that its core elements clash for me, and that's the thing that I think prevents it being game of the year.
Right.
But you reckon it's game of the year.
And I think it is game of the year because all of those elements do come together.
Yeah, and I guess
disagree more, I think, on this game.
Hopefully not. I mean, that's the beauty of conversation.
Although, we can agree that the epilogue is a bit slow and a bit long.
It is very slow, but that song is very good. You guys let us know what you think down in the comments below. By the time we get to the Game of the Year discussions, everyone else will hopefully have finished it too. And we can have a wider debate as to where it belongs in the pantheon of greats against God of War, Celeste, and all that kind of stuff. Yes.
What? Number one.
It's not number one. But you guys, let us know what you think down in the comments or get in touch with us on social media. This has been the What Culture Gaming Podcast. I've been your host, Scott Tilford, joined by Josh Brown.
Hello.
And goodbye. And we'll catch you guys next time.
Goodbye. Bye.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.